From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. You might be familiar with Tammy Duckworth as the junior U.S. Senator representing our home state of Illinois in Washington, but you might be less familiar with Senator Duckworth's remarkable life before her time in office. Her newly released memoir, Every Day is a Gift, chronicles her life as a mixed-race child in Thailand, born to an American father and an ethnically Chinese Thai mother. It follows as her family moved to Hawaii, living on food stamps and working nights and weekends as a teenager, to her service in the armed forces, where she was grievously wounded in an attack on her helicopter in Iraq. And finally, to her time as a mother. The cover shows her cradling her newborn as her daughter plays in front of her wheelchair. Joining us now to talk about her new memoir, Every Day is a Gift, is Illinois U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth. Hello, Senator Duckworth. Welcome back to The 21st.
It's so good to be on. Thank you.
Listeners, we want to invite you to join our conversation, but I do want to point out that this is going to be sort of a different sort of conversation from the usual current events and politics talks that we usually have with Senator Duckworth and other public officials. We'll be focusing on her life and her new memoir, which was released a couple of weeks ago. The number to join us is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show. So, Senator Duckworth, I want to begin with your childhood. There are a few I guess maybe now you can look back and think they're humorous anecdotes, but you know, one about cheese. There's one about how your father wanted to name you Winifred, but the Thai official wouldn't allow it. But they all serve as examples about what it was like growing up as a mixed race child in Thailand. Can you talk about what that experience was like for you?
Yeah, you know, I was an other. I didn't quite fit in with my Asian cousins, and they made fun of me. And remember, I grew up in Southeast Asia post-Vietnam. So there were a lot of Amerasian children, the children of American GIs like my dad and Asian women, whether it was in Thailand where we were or Vietnam or Cambodia or other places. Unfortunately for the other kids, most of them were abandoned by their American fathers who went home after their tour of duty was over. My dad retired from the Army in 72 and stayed and raised us. So I always knew that I was really lucky to have this privilege of having been born an American and having an American passport, because I could see other Amerasian kids, you know, working on the streets as beggars because they had been abandoned. And so, my cousins would joke and say that my dad smelled like cheese, which is sort of a Southeast Asian thing of the time. They said, you know, all foreigners smelled like cheese, and it was gag inducing. And so they made fun of me a lot, and I didn't quite fit in with my cousins. So I always felt like, you know, I wasn't quite where I was supposed to be growing up. But it's funny because now that I'm, you know, here in the States, I have this otherness to me because I'm Asian American. So it's always been this feeling of not quite fitting in 100% wherever I am.
And I want to ask also about your parents then. So first, your father, Frank Duckworth, he grew up in a town called Winchester, Virginia. It's the foot of the Blue Ridge Mountains, and it changed hands between Confederate and Union control during the Civil War multiple times. Your mother, Lamai, was a shopkeeper, and her parents were shopkeepers in China before fleeing Mao's communist China for Thailand. Can you talk a bit about them and how they came to meet? How did they come together?
Well, my dad at this point had come off of active duty status and was a reservist, but in Asia. He was working for the U.S. Army as a U.S. Army civilian at this point. And so my mother had this little shop that sold souvenirs that she owned with her brother. And my dad wandered into the shop one day and, you know, he says he fell in love at first sight. And my mom said that he hung around so much and scared away all of the other suitors. And so there's no one left, so she married him because he scared everybody else away. My dad was a pretty big guy. My dad also was a very good marksman, he scared away all of the other suitors, she claims, but I think that there was a lot more to the story than that. But and he fell in love and you know, they married, and he made a whole life for us in Asia for the next decade or so.
Yeah, and you write his experience in Asia and and you're he sort of figures very prominently into the first chapters of the book. And you write that he sort of could be like the big man, literally, physically in Asia, but also with, you know, an American, he could command a pretty good salary, at least compared to what native people in those lands were making. Can you talk about his, you know, and yet you had this sort of fear that a lot of mixed race children had, that he might leave and not return. There was a time when he was assigned to a posting in the United States for a year, and you were concerned that he did not, that he would not return. And he did, but you write about until this day, you still receive letters in your Senate office from men and women in Southeast Asia or from Southeast Asia asking for help in finding their fathers. Can you talk about that aspect of your childhood and the broader experience of people you hear from?
Yes, I wanted to give readers an idea of the knife's edge balance that my future depended on my dad staying. It's funny, when I started writing the book, it really wasn't going to be about my dad. And then as I wrote it, he became a theme, one of the themes in the book. And it forced me to sort of re-examine my relationship with him as I look back. I really wrote this book for my daughters to explain to them why it was worth me going to war, why it was worth me losing my legs, and why I would do it again. Because I wanted to write a love letter to my country about how great, you know, how despite everything, despite all of our shortcomings, this nation, this democracy is still worth it. But my dad emerges as a theme as I started writing this. And yeah, you know, my dad was actually that one year he was stationed at Fort Sheridan back here in Illinois. And we didn't know that he would come back. He said he would, but lots of other GI dads never came back and just left. And to this day, anytime I travel to Thailand, but even without traveling to Thailand, I will get letters in the mail addressed to, you know, Senator Tammy Duckworth, Washington, D.C. And it's pictures of a young Thai girl with an equally young and handsome American GI and just his name and say, you know, he was Sergeant Brown and he was in the Air Force and I'm his son. And now I'm, you know, 45 years old and can you find him for me? And I was like, you know, there were a lot of Sergeant Browns and Sergeant Smiths, and I do what I can, but, you know, most of the time I can't find their dads for them, unfortunately.
And I want to come back to another aspect of your dad that intertwines with your current work in public work, which has to do with his relationship to being a veteran and government aid. But let's put a pin in that for now. And your family moves to Hawaii at one point, and you describe in the book being close to homeless and on food stamps. Can you talk about your adolescent and high school years in Hawaii, what that experience was like?
Yes. You know, I didn't really talk about this part of my life very much until I ran for Senate in 2016. And I started traveling around Illinois. And specifically, I was down in Edwardsville talking to some steel workers. And couple of them stood up in this meeting and said, listen, the steel mill has been shut down. I've been laid off. I'm 52 years old and I can't find another job. And how am I going to pay my mortgage and how am I going to get my kid through college? And that sort of in me got me thinking, you know, I started talking about how, you know what, my dad lost his job in his 50s when the business he worked for was sold and the new owners wouldn't hire him because they, you know, because he was too old. They could get someone cheaper with less experience. And we descended into poverty. I mean, for 5 years, my dad kept trying to find a job. Finally, we moved back to the States and all the money in the world we had bought three one-way tickets to go from Thailand to Hawaii. We didn't go to Hawaii because it was a paradise. We went to Hawaii because it was the nearest U.S. soil we could afford to get to. And even my mom couldn't come with us because we didn't have money for a visa. Because remember, even though she was married to an American and had two American kids, she couldn't get it. She would have had to wait for a visa. She would have had to pay for that. We just didn't have any money at that point. We showed up in Hawaii, I think, with maybe $200 to our name, which we went through within the first, you know, 10 days. And at which point we were essentially homeless. And thank goodness for a lady at the American Legion Auxiliary who wrote a check to my dad and got us into a sort of pay by the week short-term stay motel that all of the, you know, people who work in Hawaii as maids and doormen, you know, we all lived there. We were the working poor. And I lived that life for a while. And it was a real struggle. And I wanted to share that in the book, because it really does affect who I am as a senator today. because that experience, you know, I say this in the book, I never worked harder in my life than when we were the poorest. I worked harder during that time than I ever did in the Army. And so I reject these notions that the poor are poor because they're not working hard enough, and that they, if they could just pull themselves up by their bootstraps, they would get ahead. Let me tell you, I worked three jobs in high school. and we were trying, we were doing everything that we could. And we needed a little help, and thank goodness the safety net was there with food stamps and a free public school that I could actually, you know, graduate high school and qualify for the Army. Because if that had not been there, who knows where I would be today? I certainly wouldn't be a U.S. Senator.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce you. Listeners, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Illinois U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth, and we're focusing today on her new memoir, which is called Every Day is a Gift. If you've ever had a question for Senator Duckworth about her life and her experiences and her memoir, now is the opportunity. The lines are open at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. So you were... At this point in your life, you're a teenager, you're in high school, you're working jobs, you're handing out flyers for boat cruises on Waikiki Beach, you're doing yes, other jobs.
I had to figure out if I should hand somebody a booze cruise flyer or the romantic dinner cruise flyer.
Yeah, for the couples or the young, or for the frat guys coming through, right?
Exactly.
But you also talk about when you, and it's you who spearheads bringing your mom over. Your dad was maybe too humiliated that he hadn't been able to find work. I don't want to put, I mean, you speculate about what his motivations were, but you bring your mom over. You write to her. She hadn't heard from the family in months back in Thailand. And then your dad rushes to get the family off of food stamps. And this also... There's also a bit in the book about his lifelong refusal to accept veterans benefits. He had been wounded in his military service, and you judged him harshly for this at the time, I think you'd say. But over the years, you've come to see that it's a common attitude among veterans.
It is very much a common attitude among veterans. It's this idea, you know, when I was younger, I didn't get it because I'd never served in the military. So I didn't understand the idea. And the basic idea of it is that you take care of your buddies first and yourself last. And you don't take something if you don't desperately need it, because your buddy, someone else may need it. And so it's this idea of you know, serving something bigger than yourself. And I didn't understand that as a kid. I was just hungry. And I knew that we didn't. And, you know, my dad, as soon as my mom showed up from Thailand, went and said, hey, she's here. I'm going to turn back the food stamps because we have somebody else to help work. And at the time, we were still hungry. We were still going to bed without dinner a couple of nights a week, especially at the end of the month. And so I did judge him harshly because, you know, he put this ideal over the actual struggle of his family. Well, since serving in the military and since, you know, it really started when I served at IDVA, the Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs, that I realized that this is endemic. And this is a real challenge because veterans oftentimes will say, I'm not going to sign up for VA care. Let the other guys have it. They think of it as if it's a finite resource. Like if they get care, that means that some other veteran won't get care. And in Illinois, there's a good example of this difference. So the VA, for example, thinks that there are 800,000 veterans in Illinois. That's how many have actually registered with VA. But I know that there's 1.2 million because Jesse White tells me that 1.2 million individual veterans have actually signed up for veterans driver's license plates. So there is a difference of 400,000 veterans who are in Illinois, more than what the VA thinks. And that colors VA's decision on where they build their next hospital. So by not being counted as a veteran, by not signing up with VA, you think you're helping your buddies, but in fact, you're harming your buddies because that's keeping VA from building another hospital because they don't know that you're there. Your notes didn't get counted. It also hurts their family members. So when my dad passed away, my mom couldn't get any VA benefits because my dad, over the years, had repeatedly basically lied to the VA and said, I'm fine. I have no problems. There's nothing, no issues here. So when we tried to get her some help, they had all of these records of my dad, you know, signing and testified that he didn't need any help. So my mom ended up losing the house that they were living in because her income was drastically reduced once my dad passed. And that's what a lot of spouses go through of our veterans who don't sign up for VA care.
We need to take a break in about a minute here, but just briefly before we do that, maybe we can set up the next part of our conversation. You write a lot about wanting to make your dad proud and never really feeling like you could do so. Did that fuel your desire to go into the military?
Not at all. I thought I would serve in the Foreign Service. My dream from the time I was a child to go and work in an embassy and be the person stamping passports, visas and passports, and maybe someday becoming an ambassador. I really loved following my dad around Southeast Asia when he worked for the United Nations. I saw what a shining light on the hill we were as you know, our nation, and how everybody looked up to us. And I wanted to be the person bringing humanitarian aid overseas. I wanted to be the person representing all the ideals, you know, of America. So that's what I was on track to do when I lost my job one summer, when I was laid off. The company I worked for was sold and I was laid off, and I was looking for a job for the summer when some of my classmates who were veterans at my master's degree program said, well, why don't you go to basic training? Take some ROTC classes, go to basic training. They'll yell at you for 10 weeks. You'll make some money. You can't spend it because the drill sergeants won't let you. And you come back with a little bit of money and you learn more about the military. And I thought, yeah, why don't I do that? Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will pick up there after we take a break. We're speaking with Illinois U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth. Her new memoir is called Every Day is a Gift. More to come. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us. This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Illinois U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth. She has a new memoir out. It's called Every Day is a Gift. We're having a bit of a different kind of conversation than we usually have with her in her capacity as a senator. No, not a lot of current political things today. We're mostly focusing on the memoir. If you want to join our conversation, the number is 800-222-9455. So, Senator Duckworth, you talk about how you decided to join the military. What drew you to piloting in helicopters?
Well, I fell in love with the Army like no one ever fell in love with the Army before. I love the meritocracy of it. The fact that when I showed up, it didn't matter that I was this little, you know, biracial Asian girl. It only mattered if I was willing to learn to shoot straight. And when we were on a road march, if somebody dropped their pack because it was a little heavy, that did you step up to help carry it. And so I knew I was a goner, that I was going to be a lifer in the Army at basic training. As far as helicopters were concerned, when I was at NIU, at Northern Illinois University, getting ready to commission, we had to pick what jobs you wanted. I thought I would become a linguist because I speak several languages, or go into the Signal Corps and work on telecommunication systems like my dad did. Again, still trying to please my dad. and the instructor said, you know, if you really, guys, you put down whatever job you want, but you have to put down some combat arm jobs. It's mandatory because you could be an accounting major wanting to become a finance officer, but the needs of the Army are they need infantrymen. You're gonna be an infantryman, except for Duckworth. Duckworth doesn't have to do that. Duckworth, women are not allowed in combat. So they told me this when I was in DC, actually, in Washington, DC, finishing my master's. And so I was a little indignant, but I went ahead and put down Signal Corps and all that. And then when I got to NIU, I talked to the instructor there, and he said, no. You know, women can fly and women can be in air defense artillery. So I put those two down as my top two choices. And then I took the aptitude test at Midway Airport for the pilot skills aptitude test. And I scored off the charts on it. And apparently I've got a brain that's really suited to be a helicopter pilot. And that's how I got into Army aviation was, I just thought that it was not fair that guys had to face this risk of combat, but I was gonna make equal pay for equal work, but I was not gonna have to face the same risk. So yeah, I put my top two choices were aviation and air defense artillery.
So we're going to skip ahead a little because I know you have somewhere to go at 11:30. So I want to move ahead to the moment by moment experience of the attack on your helicopter and the aftermath. Yes. And I've got to say, I've been covering you as a journalist for years now. I've heard the story before, but reading it in the book, it was still breathtaking. You say you were so badly injured that at first your crewmates thought they were doing a recovery operation rather than a rescue. And you write that you don't have any memories of that day, and I gather that's still the case. But there are vivid descriptions of what happened and your injuries. Can you talk about the process of revisiting that experience over the year for this book and for other purposes?
Yeah, I wanted to be true to that experience to honor my crew, the men who saved me, the crew of my aircraft and the crew of the rescue aircraft. We were the Mad Dogs out of Midway Airport, and also the Mustangs out of the Missouri National Guards. We were a mixed crew of Illinois and Missouri National Guardsmen. And my buddies did think I was dead. The pilot in command of my aircraft is a police officer and an EMT in the civilian world. And he looked at me and said, "Tammy, you were just a torso. There was no bottom half to you. And I knew you were dead." I remember everything until we land the aircraft. And then I don't remember anything else. Although if you read the book, you'll hear the account from all of the other people. I had to go back. I went in the process of writing this book and found the doctors and the nurses who worked on me. And they gave me the stories. And one of the things that they told me was that they actually, when they sedated me in Baghdad, for the final time, they gave me a drug whose side effect was to wipe your short-term memory. And they did this as an act of mercy for all of the wounded troops coming through with catastrophic injuries like mine, so that you wouldn't remember. And so that's why I don't remember the rest of that day. But I'm very proud in the book to talk about everything that happened that day, because it's really to honor the men and women who were there and what they did for me. You know, if you read it, I don't know, maybe I'm emotional. When I read it, I had to read it out loud for the audiobook version. And I cried. I still cry reading it because I'm just so grateful. And the book is called Every Day is a Gift, because every day since that day, it has been a gift that my buddies gave to me. I didn't get a tourniquet. My Sergeant Chris Fierce, recognized that I was still bleeding. So he's the first person to realize that Tammy doesn't have a tourniquet, but her heart must still be pumping because she's still bleeding.
And yeah, they saw the blood coming out on the floor of the helicopter that you were being evacuated on. Yeah, and I know our time is so tight, and it's, you know, there's so much more here. You write about the recovery, owning the suck, and how challenging that was. But I also, before we leave, I do want to ask you, the last chapter of the book it's called A Score to Settle, and you detail the challenges and triumphs of motherhood. Can you just talk briefly about how it's been navigating motherhood to two young children while being a nationally recognized public figure, among all the other challenges you've had to overcome?
Yeah, I wanted to do two things with that. One, I wanted to be honest about the IVF experience and the fact that I had my second child 2 weeks after I turned 50. And I had been essentially lied to by omission when I was going through IVF early on, because I'd gone to a Catholic institution for help. Because that's where VA referred me, and they said that I had a 5% chance of less than 5% chance of getting pregnant. And I wasted time until a good friend of mine, Judy Gold, who's an attorney in Chicago, found me, and I met her, and she hounded me until I went to Northwestern Fertility Clinic. And I went there, and within 18 months of showing up there, I was pregnant with my first child. So I wanted that to be clear for other women and other families that are trying to start a family to realize, you know, all is not lost, and this is what the process is. But then I also wanted to be honest to all of those moms who work outside the home. And if people get this for Mother's Day, I hope that, all the moms out there will see themselves in it. And basically, I wanted to be clear that there is no work-life balance for moms. There's no work-life balance. You, when you are at work, feel like you are failing your family and failing your child. And when you are with your child, you feel like you're failing your job. And I felt that in a hyper intensive way, because I was doing it while I was on a campaign, and then as a United States Congresswoman, and then as a senator, trying to serve the people of Illinois and trying to be a mom. And, you know, I realized that what the Army taught me, which is the 80% solution, you know, is the best. Sometimes that's the best you can do. You know, sometimes I send my kid to school in her pajamas, or I put her in her school clothes the night before, because I know the next morning I've got to be on the floor.
That's brilliant.
Early.
I love that.
Yeah.
Idea.
So I put her in bed in knit leggings and a t-shirt, and, you know, maybe that makes me not a good mom, but you know what? My kid was dressed the next day for school.
I'm going to steal that one. Senator Tammy Duckworth is the junior U.S. Senator for Illinois. She's a Democrat. Her new memoir out now it's called Every Day is a Gift. Senator Duckworth, thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me on. Be well, everyone.